are listening to Teacher Talk It, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide. www.teachertalkit.co.uk. Like, subscribe and follow to stay in the know.
And on the surface, you know, it initially seemed, you know, quite straightforward. But I think when you dig beneath the surface and start actually kind of accounting for the principles more concisely in your lessons, there's a lot of merit to be gained from sticking with it and mm-hmm. building your lessons around the principles.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
Hello everyone, this is Ross, the most influential blog on education in the UK here at Teacher Toolkit. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Sean Quinn, Head of Psychology at King's Ely Senior School in Cambridgeshire, England. You know, who are you? What do you do? And give us one interesting fact, non-educational, about you and your life.
Hi, I'm Sean Quinn. I've been Head of Psychology at King's Ely for 10 years now. Prior to that, I was a prep school head in Berkshire at Barewood College. And prior to that, I taught for 7 years in America in a school for kids that had been pretty much thrown out of mainstream education.
Okay.
Interesting fact, I was once sent to Hawaii to stop a group of coaches complaining about the conditions out there.
Right, the Americans teaching thing's quite interesting, but so's that. So I might come back to that story later. Right, thank you, Sean. We're going to unpick the principles of Rosenshine. So one or two people will be very familiar with that. Maybe it's new to you also, but it's a piece of research from 1982 by a chap called Barrett Rosenshine, who recently passed away and published a great piece of research which was drawn upon his 40 years of working in the education field. And I'm going to particularly pick on Sean in terms of his insights and how he's used the principles. When did you first discover Rosenshine yourself, and how did it make you think as a teacher?
So it's been a school initiative for ours for probably just the last 2 years, and prior to that I wasn't really aware. And you know, like all teachers perhaps, you know, another initiative, another bit of research, another new idea, and on the surface, you know, it initially seemed, you know, quite straightforward, but I think when you dig beneath the surface and start actually kind of accounting for the principles more concisely in your lessons, there's a lot of merit to be gained from sticking with it and mm-hmm. building your lessons around the principles.
And so my next question was on the kind of, you know, off the fence, skeptical or optimistic. So you mentioned that you know the usual with teaching, we're very busy, time poor people, and there's another initiative. So how long did it take you to kind of veer away from initial skepticism towards, oh, this is really refreshing? And how's that, I guess, Rosenshine dialogue playing out across the staff with other colleagues?
I guess, you know, a lot of it's a little bit like my position, really, that, you know, some people as always really buy into it, and some people won't buy into it at all, and then there's that gap in the middle, that space in the middle. I guess for me it was kind of, you know, we broke it down into the principles, so each few weeks we would introduce a new principle, and kind of when you see the headline, it's like, well, of course I do that, and then the next time, of course I do that. But actually, when you start to really unpick your lessons, how often are you doing that, and how much in the lesson is that happening? Mm-hmm. And then I think you really start to see that, yes, you do all of those things on occasion, but can you honestly kind of put your hand up and say you do all of those things most of the time? And you know, I wasn't, and now increasingly mm-hmm. I'm trying to do that.
What are your colleagues kind of reporting in terms of how they've kind of absorbed the research?
I would say similar to me, as in all schools, that there are people that are really buying into it and really trying to change with an open mind, and then mm-hmm. there are people probably still a little bit stuck in that place that I was. Well, mm-hmm. Of course I do this, there's nothing wrong with my teaching, it all works. And I think no matter what you try and introduce, that's that always seems to be the position for me.
Yeah, and I guess in your role, you know, head of psychology and being immersed with that kind of cognitive science, I guess this piece of academic research kind of confirms or validates what you do as a teacher, which is, you know, the kind of art of teaching in some respects.
Yeah, absolutely. And you do see, you know, it's a simple use of psychological research that's accessible, you know, to all teachers. It's not overly complex. It's broken down and it's presented in a very usable tool-like manner. So I think, you know, exploring it is a very valuable exercise.
Now, I'm going to assume that people listening to this podcast and maybe watching this video version are familiar with the Rosenshine. And if you're not, people listening will include the links. But I'm going to assume most people are who are connected with Teacher Toolkit. But Dan, Sean, on my travels, I visit a lot of schools and probably a good half to three quarters are familiar with the work of Rosenshine. But very few teachers can... They understand the value of the 17 principles, but very few can recall what they all are. So I guess my question is, how have you broken them down into a kind of memorable teaching loop? Are there any key themes that you can return to that make it a bit more of a memorable sequence? I know that's a tough question, but let me see what your thoughts are.
So we're basically operating on the amended 10 principles, and I don't really have a trick or an acronym or a way of grouping those together, and I don't really kind of feel that I should or have to. I just have grids available to me and all the time, and then when I use the product, the Lesson Up product, I just cross check that I'm meeting those requirements, and if they're not there, I'm building them in. I don't think, you know, that there's the need to kind of memorize them. I think there's engagement elements, there is pre-planning elements, there's scaffolding and modeling elements, and beyond that, I think, you know, that it would be not good use of time just to kind of be recalling them.
So let me just go. I'm just going to refer to the 10 principles, and these are from the 2010 paper from Rosenshine. So number one's the daily review, so the kind of do now or the retrieval from last lesson. Stage two is to present the new material using small steps. For people listening, stage three is ask questions. Then we move on to provide models. Stage five, guide student practice. Number six, check for understanding. Seven and eight is obtain a high success rate. So if you're posing a question and checking for understanding, make sure you have lots of students responding rather than one. Then stage eight is offering the scaffolded resources, so your differentiation. And in stage nine and 10 is the independent practice, the guided practice with a weekly and a monthly review as you move through the materials. So I know Lesson Up fairly well. For people that don't know the power of Lesson Up, I guess, is, but I know there's over 1 million lessons available, isn't there?
Absolutely. And
Sean, how long have you been using Lesson Up for?
It's hard to say exactly. I would guess around 2019, around that time.
Right, so before the pandemic. Okay, great.
Yeah, and just on that, I think it kind of future-proofed me for the pandemic. It was a great thing to... I was ahead of the curve, I felt.
Yeah, you were, yeah.
In terms of online learning. It was.
So I guess as soon as the pandemic hit with lockdown, you just flipped over, straight over.
Yeah, and it was really nice to be able to say to my students, look, it's business is normal, guys. You know, we're just going to be meeting online, but our lessons aren't going to be necessarily, you know, we do other things, but primarily, you know, Lesson Up's a big part of what we do. Mm-hmm. It's going to stay a big part. And I think my students found a lot of reassurance and comfort from that.
So I'm going to come back to Rosenshine, Sean, and I guess this is the money question for me is, how has the Rosenshine principles changed the way you teach?
I guess it's intertwined with Lesson Up again, really, because I think what I found I was previously doing is I was creating resources, I was presenting, I was over-presenting. Students were being allowed by me to be a little bit too passive. And then when it came to assessments, we would be learning for the assessment. And I think using Rose and Shine and Lesson Up together has made the focus more on the here and now and learning in the lesson, reinforcing in the lesson and building knowledge rather than, you know, here's a presentation, we're not going to think about it for a month and then somehow there's going to be a task. And I think I'd got quite lazy in my approach, you know, as a lot of teachers perhaps do. And mm-hmm. not through being lazy, but just not maybe thinking about outcomes enough. So I think, you know, breaking things down, assessing knowledge, and really increasing massively the contribution of each person in the class. That's probably mm-hmm. been the significant change, you know, that kind of checking the understanding of everybody.
Yeah, it's a great point, that checking the understanding. So if for anyone that's listening that's read the original paper by Rosenstein, it was actually produced on a typewriter in 1982. The coincidence is the phrase check for understanding features 17 times. I don't know if that's a coincidence that it ended up becoming 17 principles, but I find it interesting that that's the most used phrase throughout the whole original research paper. The next key question then, Sean, is how has it changed the learning of the kids in your classroom, the principles?
I think it's that idea that we learn in the moment, that the I got used to students kind of, if you sprung a surprise test, oh, I didn't know we needed to know this, or mm-hmm. I didn't know we needed to learn this. And I think it's made them really focus that the learning is every minute of that lesson through the daily practice, the reminders from the lesson, the small steps, the practice, the checking the understanding. I think all of that has made the lessons like very active, very focused, and with clear outcomes. I know where everyone is, and the student themselves know.
Yeah, that was my next question, actually, because you mentioned earlier, you know, not lazy per se, but, you know, being a bit more rigorous with the outcomes. How do you now know? What's that kind of concrete evidence you have that the Rose and Shine, the lesson up type stuff is making a difference to teaching and learning, and here's the data to back it up?
So I build all my questions, whether they're multiple choice, slightly longer questions, mind maps, I build them all in. So all the questioning that's going to happen is there. And then you can access those results not only in the lesson, but any point afterwards. So I had a lesson today. We did a task. There was 60% accuracy. That's straight in my favorites. That becomes a starter question tomorrow or the next lesson, because that's not hit that 80% sort of accuracy rate. So my students know, all right, we can park that one now for mm-hmm. a while. We've hit the 80-100%. And if we stay below it, you're going to keep seeing that question.
And where does that 80 come from? Is that just what you're happier with, or does it something that comes from lesson up, or?
I think that comes from the Rose and Shine. He talked about 80%. I use that as a, you know, it's a fluid sort of thing. But once I think most people have got something,
move on.
But even today, at one point, it was 100%. I happened to have that one again later on, and it had dropped because you know, memory ebbs and flows in a lesson. So we need to revisit that next time. And then once we've got mastery, we move on.
So there you go, folks, people listening. You know, it's really reassuring, Sean, to hear how you can kind of recite, I suppose, what a difference it has made to your teaching and learning. So, Sean, in the classroom, when you're on your lesson up bits of software, what are you seeing on your teacher dashboard in the moment and kind of, you know, kids are asking you to do all sorts of things? Give us an insight into what you can see and what you can do in that moment.
So I think it works perfectly for me in that moment. So if it's a multiple choice, they all enter and you come up with the scores, you know, 10 people got 100%, 9 people, whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's recorded. If you want a slightly longer answer, I'll pose some thought-provoking answers sometimes. They'll type their answers in. They all appear as almost like cue cards on my screen. And I can keep permanent records, take screenshots of those. Mm. I can pair people up to contribute together. You've got a record of their answer, whether it's something you want to look at or whether it's just right or wrong or a drag-and-drop exercise. You've got a record of all of that in real time, that you can kind of say, right, I need to talk about this right now because we've only got 20% right. I must have not been clear. Or, like I said, you could say, right, it's not quite 80, I'm going to add that. Or you might pick out a more extended answer that was really good and say, right, I'm going to talk about this answer because it's exactly the sort of thing that we need to do. Or we can compare answers if the children are a bit more brave. You know, here's an answer that's kind of right. Here's one that's slightly more refined. So you're getting access almost to their answers, but also their thought processes, those kind of metacognitions. You're seeing what's going on in the moment, and it tells you and enables you to react in the moment, not a week later when you've
marked books. I guess going back to that point, you know, where you mark books, it's 2 weeks later. The data online gives you that hard, concrete scientific evidence, which you can use immediately. I've got a bit of a multi-pronged question here. What advice would you give to teachers that aren't familiar with Rosenshine, who might be working in a primary or in an FE setting, something different to your current role, or someone who's a tutor or something like that? I guess that, you know, how could I use Lesson Up in those types of schools? Or if I work in those types of schools, how could I also use Rosenshine? So there's a kind of a six-pronged attack there, different types of settings using the software and using Rosenshine. What would be your advice?
So I think that the software lends itself to any setting, really, I think, because what I found that's really helped for me, that I think is very transferable, is getting away from that kind of hands up. So somebody answers, so you get that one answer. So across an hour lesson, you might hear each kid speak or contribute once or twice. And what Lesson Up gives everyone a voice, you know, so you have a class of 30, you pose a question, you get 30 answers right away. So 10 questions and last, you've had 300 answers. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it matters on the setting or the age, because, you know, what we do is kind of the same in that regard. And it doesn't need to be a private school with small classes. It's giving every child that opportunity to answer and for you to see where that child's at. Mm-hmm. And it just lends itself so perfectly to that. And the way you can build lessons yourself, or there's so many available now, and that would just increase, you can just then adapt. You know, a lot of them have the content, and then you can put your little flavor with the sort of questions. They're very mm-hmm. quick and easy to create. So, you know, all of a sudden you've got a version of taking lollipop sticks out of a glass that just works so much better and so much more
efficient, isn't it? More efficient.
You know, you're just, it does go back to that checking your understanding. You're checking the understanding of everyone in mm-hmm. pretty much every moment of that lesson.
Yeah.
So people are engaged and they're focused, because you're not reining people in, because you've not really lost them by over-presenting in the first place.
It's such a good point. And what about the Rosenshine? People not familiar with it, and if I was in a primary setting or an FE, is it a transferable set of principles, in your opinion?
Yeah, I would think so. And I think like all initiatives, it can be a bit overwhelming. You know, how am I going to do all this on top of what else? And I think it's just to see it as a journey. As I haven't tried to kind of write all 10 in every lesson every time. I've tried to build in daily review without fail. I've tried to, you know, ask more questions, think of the quality of the questions. But I've still, you know, my targets I've got here, provide more models. That's for this next bit in the summer holiday, and to build more scaffolds in. That's the next step. So you pick the two or the three that you think, right, that's my goal for this term. Mm-hmm. Every class is just going to have this daily review. And that kind of daily review seems such a simple thing. And I think we kind of take it for granted that, you know, oh, I've taught it, the kids know it. But you have to teach something 3, 4, 5 times, you know, because it's we forget that everything's new to them. It's not new to us. So why aren't they getting it, you know? So that, you know, just pick some 2 or 3 simple ones, get used to that, and then build.
Yeah, so there you go, folks. Lesson Up and Rosenshine. So the links will be included in the podcast and the video for you to check out a little bit more. Now, I mentioned that was your last question. As we get past half an hour of my podcast, we move over to a little quick fire quiz, a bit of retrieval practice. And I'm going to pose lots of quick fire questions to you. Now, I don't want you to pause or hesitate. I'm going to see if I can catch you out. But I'll start off with some easy ones. So let's just start easy. So, Sean, what's on your desk today? What's on your to-do list?
My to-do list, walk the dog. It's been a long week.
Good. Okay, next question. Sean, what book are you reading?
I'm reading a book about what happened to Freud's patients.
All right, fantastic. Ever the psychologist. Okay, next question, Sean. A piece of advice for a teacher wanting to get into Rosenshine.
Slow and steady wins the race.
Sean, I'm going to assume you're doing your dream job, but if you weren't a teacher, what's that wacky career, you know, that you never had or never tried? What would it be?
Coaching soccer at an American university.
Okay, fantastic. Sean, finish this sentence. If I was Education Secretary of State, I would...
change examinations.
What's your career achievement you're most proud of? Let's give it a shout out.
Creating a prep school from scratch.
Wow, fascinating. Sean, a couple more. Who would you recommend I interview next and why?
Oh, gosh.
In education, ideally.
Williamson.
Okay. Let's see if we can get hold of him. He's done a runner at the moment, hasn't he? Final question, Sean. What's your favourite memory of a teacher, you know, that inspired you to teach?
Yeah, I got in trouble for saying this at an interview once because it is a teacher that was maybe not the best practitioner, not the best technician, but was just a really nice guy that kind of helped me out at a really difficult time.
Well, it emphasises the importance of relationships in schools, doesn't it? Not necessarily being top of your game in the classroom. So there you go, folks. Ross here at Teacher Toolkit, joined by a delightful Sean Quinn, Head of Psychology. And I've got one last question for you to put you on the spot. Sean, what would you hope to be your legacy?
People thought that I cared.
Okay. So there you go, folks. Thanks for listening. I hope you've learned a few insights about Rosenshine, the wonderful tech software Lesson Up, and some interesting facts about Sean. Thanks for joining us. I'll be on the podcast soon. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.